Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Journey Online podcast. I am sitting in for our usual host, Zach DeBerry. I am Chris Denning, our creative arts pastor here at Journey. And we're excited for today. We've got a special edition with our family ministry staff, for most of us, three-fourths of our family ministry staff. So today we've got Don Gentry, our family pastor. Say hey, Don.
Hey, Don.
Okay. Well, and so you already know what kind of podcast this is going to be.
Yeah, here we go.
We've got our Kid Street programming director, Josh Kaiser.
Hello.
Among other things. We've also got our, what do we call you, Kid Street?
I'm family ministry coordinator.
Family ministry coordinator.
The brains.
Leslie Goggins. She's how everything
gets done. The glue, the tape.
Hello, everyone.
So she says hello. Let's go around real quick and talk about... we're going to be talking about some issues today associated with parenting and kids and that kind of stuff. But for context, Don, how many kids do you have?
I have three teenage daughters, and one is 16. She's a junior in high school. My Vanessa is 15, and she is a sophomore in college?
No, you said high
school. Did I say high school? Yeah. I have my second one is Vanessa. She's 15, and she's a sophomore in high school. And then my youngest daughter is soon to be 14, and she is a freshman in high school.
14, 15, 16.
Yeah. I've been married 18 years, just
girls.
So you guys all
know. So let's pray.
Yeah, let's just have a moment of silence.
Exactly.
Josh, how many kids
you
got?
But I am blessed.
I have two. I have two boys. Jace is 8, about to be 9, and Dane just turned 6. So
nice.
Yes.
And the lone mama, what you got?
I have a 6-year-old girl, Ella, and a 5-year-old boy, Vance, kindergarten and first grade.
So you are moving.
I'm moving.
Always moving.
Always.
With the kids. Oh, man. Well, that's fun. And I'm Chris, and I've got a baby, so I don't know crap. So that's why I'm just here asking.
Oh, you're well aware
today.
Of crap right now.
Yeah,
well
yeah
aware.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so she's doing that well. She's sleeping sometimes. But so today what we want to do is we wanted to take just kind of a general drive-by overview of some of the top things, maybe top five issues that we kind of wanted to address today as far as it comes to parenting kids in today's world. So we're going to take each of these topics one at a time. And I'm just going to ask these guys to chime in just kind of as we're going along, and we'll see, you know, where that leads us. And you guys ready?
Ready.
Go for it.
Let's hit it. All right, number one, and this is in no particular order, so if you get all Bible beady on me, you can shut up. So these are in no particular order. Number one, we want to talk a little bit about bullying. So in your opinion, in your experience with your kids and kind of watching them, and even in your own experience, like, how do you help your kids deal with being bullied?
Well, I'll start, and you guys can chime in as we go along. I know for me personally, bullying has changed over the years a lot. We are now far more aware of the situation and the issues. For me personally, I was definitely very much bullied as a kid, and I suffer for it nowadays. I see my counselor regularly. No, I'm just joking. But it has changed a bunch over the years, and it is definitely on the radar scale. There's so many different anti-bullying laws. And so the biggest thing that we need to do is be able to give our kids self-confidence, and that starts at a very young age. So I would say the biggest thing that we have to do is just be aware of your child's behavior patterns. And the more you know your child, the better you're going to know if your child's being bullied or if your child is the bully.
Tell me a little bit more for a second about the self-confidence. What does that look like? How do you help your kids with that self-confidence? And why is that important when it comes to bullying?
Self-confidence is going to look different for every single child. So it's really difficult to give like a steadfast answer on what that's going to look like.
But do it. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Just do it then.
You've got 2 minutes. Go.
Okay. So it looks like a child that is well-rounded. And no, it's going to be where your child, depending on their giftedness, they know who they are. And that's going to be a process at every different stage and age development stage. And so as they grow and they understand who they are more and they understand how they fit into the realm of, I'll just say, society, their classes, their peers, the more aware of themselves they are and how their giftedness is, the more self-confident they're going to be. So that when the bully comes, it's not going to be if the bully comes. The bullies are always going to be there. It's going to be an issue no matter who your kid is. The more aware they are of who they are, the better they're going to be able to withstand the verbal abuse that's either going to come or the physical abuse. Yeah. Because if they're confident in themselves, then they're going to understand that this other person is really making up for a shortfall in their own lives. And that's really how I've tried to help our girls understand it, is just helping them have compassion for the other person, realize that they are not a victim in the situation. They're actually just, they can be a catalyst for helping the other person come into an understanding that, that they don't have to act like that.
That's cool. That's good stuff.
And,
what would you guys?
And couldn't that, when you paint that picture for your kids, that they actually can be part of the process and helping that person, doesn't that in turn then also give them confidence in themselves?
It can. It doesn't always work that easily, but yes, right. It does. Yeah. That's the intention.
Right, sure. And you know, for me, I mean, my kids are 8 and 6, so we're just sort of, you know, definitely don't have the experience in that you with 3, you know, teenage daughters would. But for me, it's really, it's sort of a strange thing. I grew up in a house where nothing was ever talked about. So, I mean, I'm, you know, talk about dealing with things now that you're still, you know, dealing with, that you dealt with 20, 25, 30 years ago. I don't even know growing up if I could recognize what bullying even was, whether it's verbal or physical. I mean, I grew up, you know, it wasn't like inner city Chicago, but I did go to a city school and, you know, people talk junk and people got in fights and, you know, you just, that's just what happened. And I never one time heard it discussed that was labeled anything other than it just is what it is. You know what I mean? Right. So now in today's world where things are different and there are, you know, different ways to look at bullying and things are labeled and there's ways to approach all of these things from different angles, it's new for me completely. Like, it's all 100% new. So I think, you know, Bridget and I, when we talk with, you know, Jace more so than anything with Dane, because Dane's just now just started kindergarten. He had only 1 year of preschool, and, you know, there's not a whole lot of stuff going on
right,
there.
Yeah.
Not too many gang fights.
Yeah, not too many. Yeah, nobody's throwing up gang signs in preschool, at least here in Huntersville. You know, we always just try to have open communication, and you'll probably hear this through all the stuff we're going to go over just with us being very open and, you know, with our kids and trying with Jace to just talk about, not pry stuff out of him, but just try to, if we read that something might be going on, just trying to let him talk to us about it and letting him know that it's a safe place to talk about stuff, whatever's going on. And a lot of times we will address other kids. If he's talking about somebody in his class, and we'll say, and if it seems like he's talking about them a lot, we'll ask, well, what's going on with so-and-so? Just, you know, because we want to know, does he understand what could be happening? You know what I mean?
Yep.
Whether he, you, if you don't recognize that it's going on with somebody else, you're not going to recognize what's going on.
Let's talk about
yourself,
that for a second, because we've got, so both of you guys have kind of got younger kids. Right. So let's talk about the flip side even. How do you make sure, like, what are things you can do to, like, make sure that you're not raising a bully? You know, because kids, I mean, let's be honest. Kids can do dumb, mean things. It happens because they're, like, dumb, mean versions of adults, right? I think we're all over there. But, like, how do you separate those two? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. It's hard. I realized early on that I raised Ella to be a manipulator and didn't realize it because with my kids only a year apart, when Vance was a baby, you know, he wanted a toy. Well, he just wanted something to put in his mouth. So I would trade out a toy and, you know, and because she wanted one and she actually had an opinion. And so I traded out a toy so that he would, you know, he would be happy and she could get what she wants. And then I've watched that over the years develop, and I know that's not really bullying, but yet I can see how she's learned, you know, she's learned to manipulate, and it's scary to think just one little thing that I thought as a mom just helping make both kids happy. So for me, how to not raise her is just to be always asking her to be aware, to think of others. We talk about you know, are you always thinking of others? And that's so hard because how many times do I go throughout my day and I think more of me than I do of, you know, even my own family. So it's just getting them to constantly ask themselves in a situation, who are you thinking of? Are you thinking about what's best for them? Are you thinking about what your actions, even though it's a want that you have, Is that action going to affect those around you?
Yeah, it seems like compassion and empathy are a real theme through a lot of what we're talking about with bullying.
Absolutely.
Of being able to have that kind of perspective, helping your kid have that kind of perspective.
Yes.
Let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about maybe kids who have difficult behaviors or difficult attitudes. I know it's none of our children. That's never happened.
Of course not.
But how do you... And I'm more asking this for, like, my own future self to listen back to, because I'm sure I'm heading for this in the not-too-distant future. But how do you keep your cool when your kid is just, like, dead set on losing it? You know what I mean? Like, I'm talking full-throttle tantrum going to town.
So, I struggle. So this is so this topic is near and dear to my heart. This is seriously something I struggle with. And part of why I struggle is, especially in Dane, I see him mimicking some of my reactions that I used to have with Jace.
Yeah.
Right. So. And then that, you know, that's easy then to throw yourself in a ring and just start beating yourself up over, you know, that you've taught basically your kids this stuff. But, you know, Bridget and I, we talk about this stuff constantly. We're, you know, we just feel like we have to be in this together because we have no idea, like, what I came from a home where nothing was ever talked about. She came from a home where, you were like in this naive bubble, right? So reality wasn't reality. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So we're like both coming from complete wrong places, but we're clueless together. So we try to talk about this stuff all the time. And we look at it like we just have to be on the same page and be there, be each other's, you know, be accountability partners for each other because we both fail.
Yep.
And sometimes she's there to step in and play, you know, good cop when I just lost it, you know, being bad cop. And, you know, not that we're trying to play good cop, bad cop, but, you know, when you do lose it, then we both understand what the end goal is. And we step in when we see the other person failing to pick it up. And, you know, so we always try to address things at the same time. If one of us aren't home and something is going on, we try to, in the moment, do what we can to minimize it, but then have the discussion later so that, you know, we can kind of talk it through and have each other there, to go through that together.
Yeah.
But we hold each other accountable, and we'll, if I lose it, she calls me out. Now she doesn't call me out in front of the kids.
Sure.
But she'll call me out and, you know, I'll do the same thing and say, hey, you know, we probably could
have
done that.
Let's talk
better.
For a minute about, is there something to, okay. This is me, outside amateur dad, not really knowing a lot about anything. Is there something to trying to understand what's underneath the bad behavior? Because I would assume that not all the time a kid is acting out in a certain way because it's maybe not as simple as she took my toy, now I'm mad. Mm-hmm. There's maybe something beneath that. So is there something to trying to dig down and figure out what that is?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know... Yeah. Okay. First of all, absolutely. You've got to stop. And that's, I think, the hardest thing as a parent, to not react, to train yourself or in the moment to just take a deep breath and try to figure out what's going on. I know for my kids, especially my son, one of the biggest triggers is hunger. Like if I...
So he gets hangry.
Yeah. If, you know, but as a mom, especially, you know, I was a stay-at-home mom, still partly stay-at-home mom. You know, you're going about your day, you're trying to do your thing, you know, what you have to get done, that you don't always stop in that moment and go, what is causing this outburst? But if I, 9 times out of 10, if I look at the clock and go, oh man, I missed that mid-morning snack, or I missed an afternoon snack, or if it's, you know, right before supper, which I call the witching hour, you know, hunger can be a huge drive. We ran into other issues, but knowing that, I think one huge thing is knowing that there is a reason.
Yeah.
And there isn't always, but when I can stop and go, okay, there's an outside influence on this, whether he can control it or not, it allows me just that extra ounce of patience to then stop and go, okay, can I meet the need? Or, you know, or at least I can come at it in a way not to give them an excuse for their right. behavior. I mean, and that's something, and there's all different reasons mm-hmm. why, but not to make it an excuse, because there are going to be times when you can't have food right when you want it or yeah. whatnot. But right. it just gives me that that moment to stop and then
you
deal
know,
with it.
We've got a 4-month old right now, and I feel the same way in a much like more basic way of like, for me, when I know she's crying because she's hungry, I'm way more calm because I have the solution. I know what to do. But when there's that problem that I can't mm-hmm. Like last night was one of those nights. I think she's hitting, like they call it like a 4-month regression or something like that, where like they hit the 4-month mark and for whatever reason they aren't sleeping as well or they aren't doing whatever. And so last night, Aubrey was a champ and was up with her most of the night and took the bullet for us last night, which was really awesome.
Shout out
to Aubrey, awesome mom. But yeah, like not knowing what the heck, like we were just trying whatever we could, you know. So like what about those situations where it's hard to identify what it is?
Well, I think I've always tried to have a plan in action. And so as a parent, if we know most of the time when we lose our stuff is usually because we aren't in control. Mm-hmm. And if we feel like we aren't in control,
and control in a good way.
Yeah. And so that's where I'll go biblical on you a little bit. The Bible
Might
says
as well.
be self-controlled in all situations. Don't be angry. Don't use bad words. Whatever comes out of your mouth, let it be beneficial to the believer. So when we look at our parenting styles, we have to understand that we are the adult and we can never expect our child to be the adult. And most of the time, like what Josh was saying, our kids are just mimicking what they see. Now, in an infant, it's a little bit different because a lot of times it's either teething or the colicky or gas or, you know, different sleep habits and stuff like that. But what you have to do in any situation is you have to have a plan in place, because if you don't have a plan, then you're going to lose it. And so your plan has to be to remain calm. And one of the things I see parents do all the time, whether they're raising a bully or not raising a bully or raising a kid that has problems, is they have very inconsistent patterns of behavior. So they'll tell the child they're going to have a consequence and then no consequence ever happens. Or they'll start counting, but what in the world number are they counting to?
Sure.
And nobody knows. And then they start adding halves and quarters.
Or they get to three and nothing happens. They just,
right.
So I said three.
My children always knew if dad counted to three, it was going to be 1, 2, 3. If they weren't done by three and about that speed, there was going to be a paddle coming. And it was just that quick. And it wasn't because I was going to respond out of anger, because I don't think I've ever spanked out of anger. And you could ask my wife or kids, but I make it a goal that I'll never – that's my plan. I'll never punish in anger.
Yep.
But my plan is they aren't also going to continue with their behavior. So you've got to address the behavior. Whatever the behavior is of the child, you've got to stop the behavior. And every child's different. Some different punishments work differently for different kids. So you've got to establish what your punishment style is. Mm-hmm. I'm a very big fan of corporal punishment. Reasoning with children just generally doesn't work at a certain age. And then corporal punishment works well to stop a behavior. But then after the behavior stopped, then I help them understand, now, why are you acting that way? Because you've got to address the behavior, because sometimes you can't figure out why. Sometimes it's just they're being an idiot, all right? Just like us. I mean, sometimes we're idiots. They're idiots, too. Their days go bad, where our days go bad, you know, it just happens. But, like, just for example, the other day, one of my girls, and I won't use their names because they might actually listen to this, one of them was having a fairly bad day, and they responded very non-appropriately to their sister and in a non It wasn't characteristic of their behavior
kind.
At all.
Yeah.
It wasn't kind at all, and it wasn't characteristic of their behavior either. And so my initial reaction was, okay, I'm going to go correct them right now. But they had already removed themselves, and it was already calm. So I purposely chose not to address the situation then and there because I was mad. So I waited probably half an hour or whatever, and then I went in and I talked with her, and I just tried to find out, okay, what's going on? Because how you just responded is not typical of your behavior. And then we had a really good heart-to-heart talk, and I helped her understand, you know, most of the time when we respond irrationally is simply because we don't have our own stuff together. And it's the same whether it's a kid or a parent. When we don't have ourselves under control, it's simply because we don't feel like life is treating us well. So we come home from a busy day at work, our kids are acting up, and we've got to confront their behavior right then.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And that's not how to – you're never going to get anywhere with that. But you're going to teach your kids that's how to handle anger. And then the other big thing to realize, because you had started with what if the child is a bully and stuff too, we've got to understand our kids' behavior sucks sometimes. Our kids –
And it's okay to say that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You've got to be okay with the fact that your child is not an angel. I've worked in schools for a long time, and I've been doing this ministry thing for 23 years, and parents are horrible now, where how dare you confront me that my child's behavior is poor and inappropriate. Because I've worked with them all day long, and your child's behavior is poor and inappropriate, and you need to deal with that. Uh-huh. And then oftentimes, like, if I came home from school with a note from the parent, holy cow, my life was miserable.
Yeah.
A kid comes home from a school with a parent, or comes home with a note from school now, the parents come into the school to confront the teacher. Why'd you send my... We believe so much in our kids now that we forget the fact that they can be... Oops. They can be really bad at talking with my hands and knocking microphones over. So we just have to be honest with ourselves that our children may be just plain mean.
So let's jump off that for a second. Because the next thing I want to talk about is kind of stress or like the pressure to perform for kids. And I want to phrase a question this way. How do we help our kids to learn how to deal with stress and not feel like they have to like perform, but at the same time, encourage them to be the best they can be and to strive for the most that they can personally. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, it makes total sense.
Because that seems like a dichotomy of how do I help them to, for instance, let's say they want to be a baseball player. How do I help my child to learn the skills and to push themselves and to grow without making them feel like if they don't, they're a failure. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
How do you challenge your kid without damaging their spirit? I'll just say from the beginning, number one, in order to help your children handle stress, you as a parent have to know how to handle stress. If you don't handle stress well, I guarantee your kids aren't going to learn how to handle stress.
They'll probably see it on your face, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If you feel like you're constantly having to measure up in your job or in life or whatever, it's going to bleed over and you're going to affect your kids. I don't care how you do this. Your children are oftentimes a reflection of you. And that's why we get so bent out of shape as parents, because we know that and we don't like that. And so we want to fix it in our kids.
Yes, but you're
never going to fix it in your kids until you fix it in yourself.
Is it inappropriate to shout amens on the podcast? Because like, this is like the third time I just want to be like, amen. I mean, because that's the absolute truth. And again, this is, if I'm just, you know, being real here, those are things that oftentimes I find that you can learn more about yourself just by watching your kids, right?
Amen.
Here we go. It's about to get all Pentecostal up in here. But you know what I'm saying? So the things that you start to see in your kids, I actually just wrote a blog for the things that we're going to be doing online here moving forward with parenting that talks about this very thing. Like, you want to start somewhere, start in the mirror. You have to start, check yourself, you know. Those behaviors are probably, you know, in the blog I mentioned that, you know, a lot of times our kids have friends, right, that we want to be the scapegoat and say, oh, you're hanging out with, you know, Timmy too much. And really, the person that they see the most and the person that they're sucking up the most information from is you.
Right there at home.
And you've got to start looking at, okay, so what am I doing that's causing, you know, my kids to pick this up? And, you know, if we're just being honest, you know, it's so easy to just fall in line with what's going on in society. And it's all pressure. It's all pressure.
Right.
Pressure to have, you know, to have all the things that everybody else has, and, you know, keeping up with the Joneses, and that's job and that's everything. And a lot of times when it's keeping up with all that stuff, it's more hours at work and, you know, more, you know, just more everything. And that is less home time, less things that really need to be addressed. So they're soaking all that in. They just think that's how life is supposed to be. And if you're, you know, if you're painting this picture of who you are on social media, and, you know, we only throw all the good stuff out there, right? You know, you know, all this stuff, and they're soaking all of that in. They're thinking that, well, this is who you have to be, and this is what you have to look like. And so you are putting all that pressure, you know, you're showing them what a life of pressure looks like.
Yep.
You know, so
I also think I've realized with my kids, especially if you're talking about performance, whether that's academics or sports related, they pick up on your conversations with other adults. for example, my daughter, you know, she's tumbling anywhere. She's climbing door frames. She's doing all that. And, you know, we recently put her in gymnastics. And, you know, this is a first for us. We haven't done that. But yet, you know, I see a natural skill in her. And it's a desire. She's enjoying it. But I also see just if just one almost slip of the tongue, not in a bad way, but if I'm talking to someone, whether it's on the phone or someone's over, and I talk about those abilities and what I see in her, I think she can easily take on that as it's, oh, that's what I have to do now. Mm-hmm. And it can happen with anything, even just something that's not performance-wise, but they hear our conversations. And I think we forget that they pick up on that, whether it's a compliment or not, but then it becomes, they internalize that, I think. And then they feel like mm-hmm. they have to live up to it. So I think it's, as parents, we also have to watch. You can compliment and be proud, but at the same time, don't watch ourselves so that we're not accidentally adding that pressure to our kids.
Absolutely. I was just going to say, you know, as you know, a dad who coaches, you know, my kids' sports teams, and when you just said that, I mean, there are kids who, if my son sees me complimenting or praising somebody for their play on a particular play or that day or whatever, you know, they can construe that as, well, this, I've got to be able to do everything mm-hmm. that they just did, especially as the dad, like, that's my dad praising somebody else's kid. I want that praise. You know, so, you know, you gotta be careful. And I found myself in conversations with Jace before that, you know, no, you don't have to be able to do, you know, he made the All-Star team, and there were still moments when he felt like he, you know, just wasn't good enough, or, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and he was putting that pressure. So, you just have to, and every kid's different. Every kid, you know, you have to be able to read your right. kid might be able to handle certain things differently, and you just have to know your kid. But it comes back to open communication. You have to be able to communicate. And if you are, again, if you are doing what you're supposed to be doing as far as checking yourself and looking in the mirror and seeing what am I doing? Am I painting this picture? And if you do decide to put things in place and put margin in your life, and so you don't have the pressure and all those things, communicate that with your kids. Mm-hmm. This is what mommy and daddy are doing, and this is why. So you can help, because your actions are going to speak louder, right, than right. words. So you need to have those words as often as you possibly can. So anytime we make a decision in our house, for whatever it may be, whether it's this or some other thing, we always try to communicate with our kids, because they see it. They see us behaving in a certain way. This is why mommy and daddy are doing this,
right,
to try to help, you know.
And that would be
leave.
One of the things I would really encourage is, number one, not all stress is bad. That's another
sure,
key
yeah.
element here, because even in all sports, anybody that's ever lifted weights knows that the only way you're ever going to build muscle is to stress your body, to tear it down and then to build it back up. And so we have to understand that we cannot, nor should we ever, eliminate stress out of our children's lives. We need to help them learn how to handle it. And that's the same way with us. You know, and I don't want to paint a picture that we have to be a perfect parent either. The goal here, and when we say take a look in the mirror, is simply make sure that you're taking care of yourself first, because there are going to be outside stressors that do influence your children. Teachers, coaches, life, peer pressure, bullying, all those other pressures are going to be there, but we have to take a look at ourselves first when we take a look at that. But we have to help our kids have healthy tools on how to handle the stress that does come, because we all have stress. Job mm-hmm. stress, marital stress, mm-hmm. relational stress, family stress, I mean, financial stress. There's all kinds of stress, and it's not just, make sure we don't get the idea that we have to eliminate stress. We have to learn how to handle stress. Yep. That's the biggest thing
good.
I wanted to
That's
get
good.
Across there.
Mm-hmm. That's good. All right, let's keep rolling. Number four, let's talk about being online and social media for kids, not just how you use it, but specifically for your kids. Like, how do we allow our kids to engage, or how should we allow our kids to engage in social media, but still keep an eye on what they're doing? What's the appropriate kind of balance? Because, Don, you've got older kids. We've got younger kids over here with Leslie. So kind of like, what does that look like across the board?
Well, Don, do you want to, I mean, you are in the thick of it, I would say, more than Leslie and I with social media. So Bridget and I, we're not social media people. We made that choice due to just some things that we dealt with early on in our marriage. It was boundaries that we put up for ourselves so we can be healthy. So when it comes to our kids, you know, we're going to be thrown to the wolves to some extent. I mean, I'm involved in it a little bit and have been for work, but it's been very minimal. But Bridget and I have talked about this stuff. Bridget went to a class last year. CMS had a social media class that they gave for parents. Mm. Cops came in, you know, I don't know where they were from, if they were Charlotte or Cornelius or wherever, but they came in and they had a guy speak on, you know, online stuff and how to protect your kids and, you know, what to look for. And it was really, Bridget loved it. It was really helpful for her because
we have that here too. We did that. We did a seminar on that too, and we still have access to all that material and curriculum as well.
See, that's great.
We'll have Daniel link to that in the show notes for us.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, yeah, Bridget and I, the extent that we've talked about it, it's, you know, if our kids are using an app or if they're using, you know, some form of social media, then we are too. It's as simple as that. If they have it, then we have it, because we have to know it, understand it, see what exactly it all entails. If they're, you know, as they get older, if they're on Twitter or you know, on, you know, kids aren't on Facebook now, so by the time our kids are there,
several of them are still on Facebook. Yeah. It's a common misnomer that there are still a lot of teenagers that use Facebook, not as much as Twitter. Or
you know, but if they're on Twitter, then you're following them. That, you know, if you're on Snapchat, then you're following them. You know, it's that way you know everything that's going out there. So, I mean, that's just, we're not in it yet, but those are the conversations that we've already had. So we want to be prepared so when that day does come, that we're ready to go.
And the day is coming. We live in a very social media driven world.
Yeah.
And so what we've done as a family is, number one, social media is not evil. And we've had to try and teach our girls that. However, social media is filled full of evil. And so we have to help them understand, again, having a plan. And so really we've limited our girls as to which social media things. They can have a Facebook and they can have Instagram. And simply because both of those venues do a pretty good job of keeping the pornographic material out of them.
Mm-hmm.
Snapchat, Vine, Kick, all those are very much driven by the pornography world. And our kids are inundated with porn anyways. And if you aren't comfortable with dealing with and talking about pornography, you better pull your head out, because it's all over the internet.
Getting real.
I'm just being real, man, because it is out there. And if we don't help our kids navigate that, and if we don't help them learn how to process through that, you're setting them up for failure. Because my girls have already come into contact with it. I can't even tell you how many times. Innocently, I don't even, maybe, oh, purposely, I don't think they were purposely, but even if they were, how am I going to respond to that? Am I going to freak out on them? Oh, I can't believe you did that. No. I mean, it's a temptation, and we have to help mm-hmm. them learn. How do you process? How do you deal with all this stuff that's out there? And then the bullying that comes with social media. So mm-hmm. we've just really had to help them. Number one, what you're allowed to do. We had a plan.
Set a boundary
for them. Help them learn why they have a boundary. And, you know, my girls try and push it all the time. Why do we have to do this? Well, they've finally gotten to the point where it's like, you know what? They can have Instagram and they can have Facebook and they can text. Anything else other than that, they don't really need all those other ones. And I've asked them, well, why do you need that? Well, we don't really need it. It's just all our friends have it. I'm like, well, then if you don't need it, we aren't going to do it. And they say, well, why? And I told them the exact reason why, because there's too much other stuff out there. Yeah, but we don't do that. I'm like, I know you don't do that, but everybody else does that. And we have, not everybody, a lot of other people do that. And you have to just guard yourself. And then we also put on our router at home a password, and we set the parameter as far as how much stuff comes into the house. And so when they were younger, they were only allowed Wi-Fi. They didn't have texting and they didn't have wireless abilities anywhere else. They only were allowed on the internet at home. And we had a router that protected anything that came into the house. So and then you can put on their safeguards as far as what they're going to. Because here's the other thing. Your kids are going to lie to you. I mean, that's...
What?
Or they're going to try and... No. They're going to try and...
I never lied as a kid.
Yeah, exactly. And they're going to try and do things without getting caught. And so you just have to be real. You have to understand that. I mean, if you think your kids are going to be perfect, it's just not going to happen. They're kids just like you and I were. And I think I watch a lot of parents freak out a lot of times, and I just don't understand. It's like, well, you probably did worse. Well, that's why I'm freaking out. Well... Then we just have to help them learn how to deal with it. We can't freak out on them because that's not going
to
help them at
all. That's the thing, and that goes back to I did the things that I did, plenty of them, but I, again, grew up in a house where we didn't talk about any of that. Right. We didn't talk about anything.
Yeah.
So, how you can't help your kids if you're not being honest and open about anything. Nothing is ever going to get resolved in your home, and you can't help them set themselves up for success if you're not open and real and honest.
I think something Don said was really wise too, in that the importance of boundaries, not just with social media, but for the purpose of this conversation, with social media and being online, of setting those boundaries of this is okay, this is not okay, and being just direct about it. I think the more clear you can make boundaries, the healthier it is, and helping kids to see that boundaries are not there to keep them out of the endless bounty of what they could have, but they're there to protect them from what could harm them. And I've heard this illustration a lot of, like, when you help draw a box for somebody, of being very direct of, we need it to look like this, or it needs to be this way, or it has to function like this. The more detail you can give to someone, specifically with boundaries of social media for a kid, the clearer you can be about the why, like you're talking about, the easier it is for them to see the endless possibility they have inside the box, to color every little corner of the box, rather than being set free into a place where they could possibly injure themselves emotionally, physically, or emotionally. And it seems like, to me, when I was growing up, the big thing was, when is it okay for a kid to get a cell phone, right? So that was kind of like a big question with everybody. So like now, like what, just so we can have this conversation, what do you think is a good time to start like allowing kids to engage with different things online? Leslie, what do you think? Because you got the youngest.
You know what? I don't know that we've actually ever had that conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly,
I bought Vance one last week.
Oh, thanks a lot. I mean, you know, they want one. They see their cousins, their older cousins have phones. Yeah. And so, like, I think that's their target goal. You know, Lindsay was 13 and got a phone or whatever. Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, right now, their idea of social media and stuff. I mean, Ella thinks if I put something on Facebook that she's famous. I mean, that's where their mindset is. So, I mean, honestly, we have not even talked about when.
Well, that's a whole other layer that I think the kids growing up right now, that maybe not even Don's girls, who are, they've kind of grown up as it's boomed, right? Mm-hmm. And then both of you guys, your kids are growing up with it already being boomed. Mm-hmm. And so there is this culture of like, this is not a joke. I went to Birkdale the other, I think it was maybe 2 weeks ago, with Aubrey and Addie. We're just kind of hanging out. And we're walking up, and there's this huge, like, near the movie, you know where the new juice place is over there, Clean Juice? That place is great, by the way. Mm-hmm. Anywho, so there's this huge crowd of literally 150, 200, like, screaming teeny bop girls, right? And I'm like, what is going on? And Aubrey and I are super nosy and like got to know what's going on. So we went down the corner, and I think Aubrey heard from one of the moms who was standing around. They're like, yeah, some kid who's on Vine. A kid who's on Vine who makes videos said, hey, I'm going to go hang out at Birkdale. And 150 to 200 kids show up.
Oh, my word.
Wow.
A kid friggin' makes videos on a dumb app. And right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
So that's the condition that your kids are growing up in, to where Don's girls, maybe they can see that and kind of see through that a little bit. It's like, he's on Vine. It's like, what? I mean, like, it might be cool to them. Like, oh, that's a cool thing. But like you're saying with Ella, seeing like that's a celebrity type thing. I totally understand that. So how do we how can we encourage parents right now with, because we've got a lot of young kids in our church, parents of young kids.
Yeah.
So how do we help encourage them to like see this and view this and help their kids have a good perspective of it?
Again, I think it comes back to having a plan. I keep saying that, but it all comes to having a plan, and you guys have already touched on it. You got to talk about it, and you got to talk about it as parents, and you've got to be on the same page. That's the other key to all of this. As a parent, we have to be on the same page together. If we aren't on the same page, we're going to have really tough issues, because then one parent's going to allow them to do something behind our back, and then we're going to get all torqued off.
Yes.
You got to be on the same page and enforce the same rules. Number one, go into it with a plan. You got to talk about it because it is coming.
And real quick.
Yeah,
talk about it doesn't mean because I said so.
Right. Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
It doesn't mean set up the boundary and then, well, because I said so, because I know best, because I...
Right.
No. Explain to them. Give your kids you know, some credit that they know and understand and are smart enough to understand the world and explain to them exactly why, because it's going
to
help.
And that would be the other thing, is to develop your plan based on their ages. And when we do communicate with our kids, communicate it an age-appropriate way as well.
And that takes knowing your kids. You've got to know your kids.
Yep.
Because, you know, I can tell you right now that my two kids could handle different conversations, you know, at different ages. They're different in that way and how they process stuff. Jace has always been very mature for his age. Like, he understands that he asks questions that are super deep sometimes, and you just think, you're eight. Like, this is like life's, like, you know, adult stuff here.
Yeah.
So know your kids.
Right. Definitely. And then the other thing, like with our girls, it's kind of a rite of passage. That's the other thing that I love to do and encourage, is have rites of passage. We've kind of lost that over the years.
Mm-hmm.
It gives something for your kids to look forward to as they continue to get older. Like one of our girls, she doesn't even have a cell phone yet. She doesn't get it till she's 15.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people think that that's just ridiculous, because everybody, and they've told us, Dad, everybody has a cell phone. But it's like, I don't care what everybody's doing. This is our home, and you don't get a cell phone, you don't need a cell phone. Well, but what if if you're anywhere, then I know exactly where you are because I took you there. All right. So just evaluate but that's us. You guys, every parent has to come up with their own plan. If you think your 3-year-old needs a cell phone, you know, knock yourself out. I think it's foolish, but you have to understand that when you give a child, no matter what their age is, a cell phone, you no longer have control over what they look at, over who they talk to, and over what they're viewing.
Yeah.
And child predators are out there big time.
Absolutely.
And our phones are every app is written and encoded with location devices.
Mm-hmm.
And every predator knows how to use those. Most parents don't. So you have to understand, when you give your child a cell phone, you're giving them access to a world that you don't even know yourself exists.
Yep. And you just have to be careful. There are definitely options to give yourself. I just read an article this week about a product Verizon's developing, or they might have already developed it. I don't know. It's in process. Where basically it's like a little watch for kids, and they have like little cartoons on them. Where flips open, has two buttons. One calls mom, one calls dad. And it's just a two-way, basically like a glorified cellular walkie-talkie. So that's a great way to where you can, if you're that freaked out about, no, my 3-year-old has to have a phone or whatever, like, don't give them an iPhone. Like, don't give them a freaking, like, key to open up whatever door they want to, like, scale it appropriately. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
All right, the last thing I want to talk about today is one that's, I feel like this topic's been around since, like, forever when it comes to kids, is peer pressure. So there's definitely a lot of peer pressure in our culture and with our kids and all that kind of good stuff. And it could be with anything, really. But how do we parent in such a way that helps our kids to make the right choices rather than just listening to the group talk that's around them? Especially, I mean, social media probably aids and amps up peer pressure, because instead of hearing it from the 4 or 5 idiots around you, you get to hear it from tens of thousands of idiots on Twitter.
Well, think about the example you just gave about the kid in Vine, right?
Right.
So if, let's say he's making some kind of videos that, you know, I don't know what this kid's doing, but maybe he's being goofy. Maybe he's pushing, beyond the edge a little bit about certain things he's doing, and it's gaining this mini celebrity status, right?
Yep.
Well, somebody else is going to want that celebrity status, and they're going to look at what they're doing and say, okay, well, you know, so that's pressure right there, just to like live up to what, you know, what that person's doing, or maybe, you know, we all do this. You push it a little further, I'll exceed his success because I'm going to do this. It's a little bit more than what he's ever done. You know what I mean? So, this is, cause this was my life growing up. I mean, I'll never forget. I didn't get caught a whole lot. And it's part of the reason why I dealt with stuff longer in my life than I should have, because I didn't get caught early on. I got away with a lot more. But I'll never forget in high school, put myself in a position that I should have never been in. And it was over a weekend, but I got called to a principal's office about what had happened over the weekend, because what I didn't know is the neighboring township police chief happened to be really good friends with the principal at our school, and just, you know. So anyways, down there, walk into the office, I'll never forget, a teacher who was one of my favorite teachers that I had the year before looked at me as I was walking in and obviously knew the situation and I didn't know. And she looked at me and she said, "Lay down with dogs, get up with fleas." And I was like, and to this day, I think about that all the time. Like, you know, I allowed the pressures to always, you know, do, you know, because I, you know, I was in the cool crowd and, you know, was an athlete and hanging out with all those people. But even though there were things that I knew, this is not a good idea, I shouldn't do this, I went along with all of that stuff. So to kind of go along with what you were talking about earlier, you touched on it. Bridget and I are very, we're very open with each other about those situations that we put ourselves in. And we always say, hey, when our kids are, you know, age appropriate to what they can know about those things,
yeah,
we're going to tell them about this is what peer pressure looked like in our lives. And this is what we did. And this is how it didn't work out so well for us.
Yeah.
You know, so just, again, being that open and honest about our own lives. Because, you know, my parents didn't talk about anything. And Bridget's parents, they painted a picture that everything, that, you know, everything was just fantastic and, you know, squeaky clean, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when she found out things that may have happened in her dad's life and things that he did, It like, wait a minute, what? You dealt with that? So why couldn't we have talked about this so that when I was feeling these pressures, we could have had this conversation and kept me out of this? You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, you know, being open and honest about, you know, about your own life and how peer pressure played a role in your life, I think can help.
My kids obviously are much younger, so their pressure is just, you know, being bad as far as
use,
you know,
yeah, but
it's
use the yellow crayon.
I was thinking about that, like with younger kids, it's so much more of a purer type of pressure to where, like, there's not a whole lot of manipulation going on. It's just like, I'm gonna be bad, hey, you should be bad with me.
Oh yeah,
you know.
And what we do is, I mean, we talk about, I mean, before we go into a situation, I would say that would be our strategy is, Before I bring them to church, before we go to Kids Zone or wherever we're going, we talk about ahead of time, you know, what should you do? And then we talk about, you know, what if other people are doing such and such, or, you know, let them come up with, you know, what the bad action may be or whatever. And then let them, and just talk about ahead of time, you know, it's not good to follow. It's okay to be the leader. Mm-hmm. It's okay to, you know, if they're doing something bad, is it okay for you to follow them? And we have that conversation ahead of time. I mean, obviously there are times where after the fact we're having the conversation, our strategy is to just head it off before each situation. Yeah. And sometimes then it sounds like a redundant conversation because we had it last week on Tuesday before we came,
right?
You know,
but there's something to that,
but that's what we're doing now.
No, definitely. We find ourselves the same way. And like you said, a lot of times it's going into the same environment, but just saying, hey, you know, let's be a leader today. You know, let's be a leader. Let's not be a follower. You know, that's definitely something that comes out of.
And I would definitely encourage any parent listening to this to realize that you're going to have the same conversation with your kid 1,000 times.
What?
And you may think that you've already covered it.
Right.
But their brain, neuroscience tells us their brains are continuing to develop all the way up until we're like age 30. So we ask our kids, what were you thinking? And they'll look at you with that blank stare in your face like, I don't know. And they weren't thinking. Their brain didn't honestly even connect. So what I've always tried to help our girls deal with peer pressure, and they always suffer from peer pressure, whether it's our kids getting peer pressured by themselves, by their sibling, or whether they're teenagers getting pressured to do something by their boyfriend, girlfriend, or their peers, in whatever situation it may be. Again, as a parent, you have to realize that we are being peer pressured as well, and our kids are going to model what they see how we give into peer pressure too. How do we give into the pressure to live up to society standards?
That's right.
How do we give into pressure by the way that we talk about people behind closed doors? How do we give into pressure? So they're just watching how we react as well as much as they are. The second thing is, if we want to have open communication as a parent, you can never freak out, and I cannot stress that enough. And nothing against women, But women oftentimes freak out more than men, but not always. That's not an always. That's just a more than. If you can remain calm, your kids are much more likely to come to you in any situation. I can't even tell you how many times my girls have come to us with what I would consider very unconventional and uncomfortable questions. I don't know if I'm allowed to say them on the podcast.
I know some of these.
I'm
going
to advise you, yes, as the only male in a house of four women, to not do that.
Okay, so there's multiple questions that they come to me and ask what they heard at school or whatever, and I don't freak out. You can't ever freak out on your kids, because if you do, you're going to close a door that they need open later on in life.
I will say that Don is notorious for... This is something I really admire about Don, is because Don is not scared of talking about anything with his kids, to the point of I've talked to his girls before, and I asked them about it. They're like, oh, sometimes we're just like, someone will have a question, be like, no, don't ask him because he'll tell you what it is.
Yeah, like, don't go there. Don't go there. You don't want to know from dad. Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's what...
But they do need to know from dad. That's the thing.
I would rather them know from
dad. But they know you're going to shoot them straight.
Exactly.
That's right.
And I'm never going to... I'm never going to try and paint a picture that doesn't exist. And I'm going to try and answer... I've always tried to answer it in age-appropriate discussion levels. But they're old enough now where, you know, they're hearing everything. So I'm going to be the first one to tell them what things are. And so just remember to never freak out on them. Remember that they're responding to peer pressure the same way you respond to peer pressure, and to communicate through why is it unhealthy. And that's one of the things I want to end on with this, is just remember Scripture. We aren't trying to live up to the expectations of our peers. We're living up to what God expects out of his children.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we, but don't start that teaching when they're teenagers. We've got to teach them when they're, when they're born, that we live differently because God expects us to live differently. Yeah. We don't live differently because God's going to damn us if we don't. We live differently because we say we love God. Our behavior exemplifies what we say we love. We love God. That means we live differently. Even to the point where in our home, we very seldom ever watch rated R movies. If it's rated R, it's usually because of violence. And that's not even for my girl's sake. It's for my sake.
That's right.
Because I've struggled with sexual things before in the past, right? Visual stimulation. And so to guard myself and to guard my own home, from the time I was in college, I was probably a freshman or a sophomore in college, I swore off I'd never watch a rated R movie that had nudity in it, because I didn't want to cause myself to lust or sin. So that has been a standard ever since then in my own home. Not for my girls, but for me. So guess what they grew up with? Oh, dad puts protective barriers in life to protect himself. Oh, I should do the same thing. By them watching how I live, I'm teaching them how to deal with their own pressures, because they're going to struggle with different things.
Yeah.
And so they have to learn how to deal with that themselves.
And even if it's not the exact same thing that your kids might struggle with, the fact that they see, see
it's
you.
It's just a pattern.
Yeah, we do the same thing. We try to, again, we explain to our kids why we have those boundaries, whether it's for them or for ourselves. Movies, same thing. Our kids know. I mean, there's a lot of movies, PG-13 movies now, still some might have like partial nudity or whatever, and my kids will be like, oh gosh, you guys won't even watch that one, and we're like, yes. So that's sort of like a litmus test. When our kids know that, when they say that, then we know that they're getting it, that they see that we're doing those things in our lives. So
What it comes to bite you in the butt is when you go back and you let them watch an old time movie that you loved when you were a kid. And you're like,
Oh
crap!
Oh, God,
you don't remember that was in there. Yeah, you're like, nope. Yeah.
Well, kids, I didn't know that. I forgot about that.
Well, as we're closing our time together, I just wanted to take a quick second, and as we're wrapping up, just each of you guys, I want you to share, just kind of right here in this, as you're thinking through all this stuff, what's one thought you kind of want to leave parents with? Not everyone at once.
So don't be naive to think that your kids are too young to be exposed to things. Do I have time for a real quick story? I'll try to make it quick. Very quick. Okay. So we were listening to I believe it was Pastor Jimmy Evans, a year ago we heard a sermon that he was talking your kids were going to hear things and see things, this was about sex, by the time they were age 7, stuff that was way beyond what you would imagine, right? The stuff that he was saying was like crazy. And we're like, no way, absolutely not. This is crazy. You know, fifth grade talk in school, whatever it may be, all that stuff. You know, we'll try to be proactive when that time comes. No joke. Jace turns 7 years old, goes to second grade, and all of a sudden he comes home, and it was like every other week he's telling us these things that he's hearing, and he's asking questions, and it was like clockwork.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's, you can, if you hear some of the statistic like that and you think, no way, that's crazy, it's not true, it's, don't be naive, be proactive, and start addressing it. And again, don't freak out, have those conversations as early as you possibly can.
Leslie, what about you?
I think it would be stop and look at them in the eye. You know, when your kids, it's so easy to be in the middle of something and they're calling for you and you just holler an answer or reply. But yet, as a parent, when we're talking to them, we want them to look us in the eye. We want their full attention. So I would say, when they're calling for you, stop and just get down on their level, look them in the eye. And
that's
respond to them.
That's a respect thing.
Absolutely.
That's a respect thing, and that's something that's missing in this society today.
Don, close us out. What you got?
I would say have a plan in action to be able to deal with whatever possible scenario your mind can ever come up with, because there's a good chance if that particular thing doesn't happen, something related to it will. And the more prepared you are going into all these conversations and things in life, the better you're going to respond. And the only person you can control in your response is yourself. You can't control how your kids respond to you. You can only control how you respond to your kids. And that's the biggest thing I would encourage you to do. And realize that with that being said, the only person that can truly control you is God and the power of the Holy Spirit working through you. Because we can have all the best laid plans in mind, but when our kids come at us with something that we didn't plan on, you know, how are we going to respond? We better be responding within the grace of Jesus Christ and an appropriate response.
There's a reason why self-control is a fruit of the Spirit.
Absolutely.
Very true.
Amen.
Amen.
Well, as we're closing, I want to let you know about something. We've talked about parenting a lot today. We're very excited. We've got an event coming up the end of September, September 25th and 26th.
Yep,
it's a Friday night,
awesome.
Saturday morning. It's an event we're calling Parenting with Purpose.
Correct.
I almost messed that up. I don't know why. Parenting with Purpose. Friday night is going to feature two guys from Calm University who are going to be teaching specifically about our number two issue we talked about today, kids with behavior problems, how to stay calm in the midst of all those kind of things, right?
That's and not even just kids with behavior problems. It's more designed around the whole idea of what we're talking about. How do we as parents remain calm? To help our kids respond to that more appropriately. Some of it's going to be behavioral driven, but it's not just for behavioral problems. It's for any parent, because all of our kids are going to push
our buttons. So if you've ever heard of Calm University, that's the content that we're going to be going through on Friday night with some special guest speakers. And then on Saturday morning, we're going to have Matt and Don walking us through some really, really practical stuff that's going to help you to become a better parent, that you'll leave that morning with some practical tools to become a better parent. You want to talk a little bit about that, Don?
Yeah, we're going to incorporate something different. We've got some great seminar material that we're going to be using, but then we're also going to incorporate the use of roundtables because we know that people go to conferences and then they never do anything with the information that they receive, and it's a waste of your money. So we're actually going to give you time that day around the table. Some of it's going to be personal reflection. Some of it's going to be group work. It's not going to be a ton of time, but it's going to be enough time where you have to actually engage with the topic at hand and come up with a plan. Because, again, you keep hearing me say this plan, but most of the time we fail because we have no plan. Yeah. I mean, that's just the reality of it. And we know from going to enough conferences ourselves that what do we do with those books? We stick them on the shelf and never look at it again. So we're going to give you – you're going to walk out that day with a plan in hand for you to be able to put it in play with what the topics are that we're talking about.
And
that
the cool
day.
Thing is that we want you to come as a family. So you and your spouse, we're going to be providing childcare. $30 covers your cost for the conference for Friday and Saturday. Mm-hmm. That includes childcare, so that's kind of awesome. But we want you to come with your spouse if that's available. And if you can do that, to where it's both of you coming together, you can be working together as the conference is going on.
The child care is just on Saturday, not Friday night. Friday night, it's going to be getting out later because it's from 7 to 9. You need to take care of your own child care. But Saturday, the child care is included in
perfect.
That.
Perfect. That's only $30 per family, not per person, but per family.
Correct.
So, yeah, again, that's September 25th and 26th. There's a registration on blog.thejourneyonline.com to check that out. Or just at thejourneyonline.com, you can register and pay right there online. So, guys, thanks again for hanging out with us today.
Thank you.
This
is awesome. I know this is a supersized episode, but hope you guys enjoyed it, and we'll see you Sunday.